Family Funeral, written and recited by Tony Dawson. A couple of months after our father's stroke, my brother rang me when I was in bed. His voice was triumphant as he spoke. He was dying to tell me our father was dead. "He died in my arms," he crowed down the phone, a pietà vision of him holding our dad. His tone implied that I should have known. "Why ring me at midnight?" I groaned. "Are you mad?" "Who else would I ring but my brother, dude?" he retorted, missing the point by a mile. This brief exchange was the start of our feud that lasted for decades, for that was his style. I drove down from Liverpool in the northwest. The crematorium parlour, all plastic and chromium, with a handful of mourners in the chapel of rest. The deacon delivered an anodyne encomium for the deceased, who was beautifully dressed. Then, to piped music, but with no other rites, the corpse was welcomed to its simulacrum of hell, incinerating its bones and his liver and lights. My brother opined, "So, that went off well." "You're joking," I cried. I thought it was dire. The living filed out to the room next door. Some wit inquired, "Was it lit by a friar?" as the rest of us feigned gloom and gazed at the floor. The ashes were handed in an urn to my brother, and Dad's name inscribed in the Book of Remembrance. Much the same thing had happened to our mother, but at least in her case, there was a semblance of sincerity in the feelings of those who were there. She might have lived longer if life had been fair. The early arrivals at the wake took their pick of Dad's stuff, though most of it was tat. I made a lame joke about there being quick in the home of the dead, but who understood that? The mood at the wake was unbearably tense. Relations with my brother were strained. He seemed to have taken serious offence at something that was never explained. At the end of the wake, as they say, I made my excuses and left. It would have been normal on such a day for the bereaved to be feeling bereft. A linguistic quirk put fun in the funeral, but it never appeared in this case. Dad was simply the latest numeral in the Book of Remembrance, the only trace anywhere that he'd ever existed. Meanwhile, the feud with my brother persisted. 20 years later, he rang me again, saying, "It's time to stop playing silly buggers." By then, of course, I was living in Spain. I agreed we should start behaving like brothers. I was touched that he'd decided to ring, and looked forward to seeing him once more. I invited him to visit us the following spring. He was elated we'd ended our war. But during that year, he became unwell, out of breath, complaining of pains in his chest. How ill he'd become, I was unable to tell till he heard the results of a particular test. Initially, fluid in a lung was drained. To say I was worried was clearly a misnomer, once the hospital doctors had finally ascertained he had a bronchoalveolar carcinoma. It was inoperable and the treatment expensive, but my terrified brother put on a brave face. The hospital care was thorough and intensive, and no more could be done. He'd have to brace himself for the fact his condition was rare. As the chemo was proving quite ineffective, they decided to give him palliative care. A sentence to death puts life in perspective. I rang him at the hospice, utterly distraught, while he sobbed down the phone at the prospect of dying. My words were a jumble, a discourse so fraught, for I couldn't cope with my father's clone crying. In a matter of weeks, he wasted and died. The years of estrangement were what I most rued. It was impossible for me to remain dry-eyed, for fate had made a mockery of our family feud.